Hello there, welcome to Equity Merchants. My name is Tim Gosbrim and I'll be your host. Equity Merchants is a weekly podcast where we speak to investors, founders and pretty much any investment professional on different topics covering investment in Africa. Our first guest is Victoria Fabu, the head of investment at CC Hope. We discussed everything from how she got into startup investing, the evolution of the Nigerian startup ecosystem, and her tips for founders looking to get investments. She also shared her favorite books and movies. We had a great conversation and I can assure you that this was a side. Please like, subscribe and share this episode with someone in your network. Let's get into it.
Hello, Victoria.
Welcome to Equity Merchants.
So this is a show where we speak to investment professionals, mainly VC, because that's like the most, most common investment in startups in Africa. So we speak to investment professionals, general partners, and hopefully some LPs in the future. So yeah, welcome.
Thank you. And it's good to be on the show as the first, as the first guest. And happy to share some insights.
All right, thank you. So before we get into the investments, let's talk about you. Give us some background about you. How did you get to this point?
So I've always had a passion for financial intermediation.
Okay.
Right out of school, I knew that I wanted to be in this space that had significant impact, and I wasn't quite sure the approach, but I know. I'm just giving the kinds of books I'd read at the time that you'll be creating a lot of value if you're able to bridge the gaps between the have and the have-nots. So that led me to do investment banking for a couple of years, providing advisory service, fundraising services for mature companies in financial services, FMCG, Agric. And I did that for a while, made some principal investments in healthcare space as well. But then I got an itch to do something around tech, and it was something that was intriguing for me. But then you need the same skill set as a VC investor that I'd already acquired as an investment banker, so it's easy to transition. And a good friend of mine said, "Oh, there's this opportunity to be an investment manager for a new fund. Would it be something that was of interest?" And so that's how I jumped into VC investing.
All right, interesting. So what did you study in school, by the way?
I studied accounting.
Accounting, what school?
UNILAG.
Okay. I think I said UNILAG. So we had to find someone from my school in the VC space. But
what school?
University of Calabar.
Yeah.
I've only seen a few founders, I think one or two founders, but I've not seen VCs yet. So let's see how that goes, yeah. All right, so you're the head of CC Hub Syndicates and Investment Hub. So what is that and what does your role entail?
So I lead investments at CC Hub.
Okay.
And what that entails is managing the entire investment process within CC Hub.
Okay.
CC Hub has always been known to be an ecosystem player.
Yeah.
And for us internally as an organization, funding is a critical pillar.
Yeah.
So think about all the startup supports that a company or early stage company would require. At any given point in time, funding will be one of those pillars.
Yeah.
And so the mandate is to fund startups that come through our program, but also startups that align with our thesis as an organization and provide the capital that they require to scale.
Oh, okay. So do you have specific industries that you focus on?
So we're sector agnostic.
Okay.
We invest across sectors. We look for companies that are leveraging technology to build infrastructure in their given vertical with the hope that they are able to provide access at scale.
Yeah.
So when I say access at scale, think about education. Education should be something that everyone should be able to access, but quality education is still a lot of people don't have access to.
Yeah.
Same for healthcare. Healthcare should be something everyone should access, but quality healthcare, not everyone has access to. So we look at on a vertical by vertical case, who are the entrepreneurs who are trying to innovate across in those specific verticals and provide innovation or technology that would give access at scale.
Okay. So you usually invest at the early stage, right?
Yes. Okay. Very early stage.
So at the early stage, you don't have like detailed information on the startups.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have detailed information. So it's probably just the founder you know, and maybe one or 2 months of operations.
Mm-hmm.
How is that like? And what are the skills you have or that you use mm-hmm. to ensure that you don't make bad bets?
So I won't say, again, the odds in VC, right? It's almost like gambling, right? So over time, you hone your skills and you get better at selection.
Okay.
But for very early stage, even though we say we do early stage, we still have criteria for selection.
All right.
And we expect that you've been in operation for a couple of months. You have some traction, like revenue. It doesn't have to be huge, but 1 or 2 paying customers.
Okay.
We also expect that the founder understands the space they're trying to solve a problem for, or has advisors who understand the space they're trying to solve a problem for.
Okay.
We look at the problem and say, how big enough is this problem? Because the founder might be great, but the problem is not big enough, and so fitting in might be the problem.
Yeah.
We're not gung-ho about product market fit.
Okay.
But we need to understand how the company will, what kind of product the company is looking to build, and if it will be significant, or if it will have significant capacity to scale.
Okay.
Right. So those are some of the things we look out for. The numbers, as you say, might not be there, but I think they are qualitative factors that we can look at in terms of how we select the startups.
Okay. So you mentioned wanting to always wanting to work in a career path that like gave you the opportunity to make impact.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like one of the easiest ways to do that in Africa, especially because technology can help scale efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone wanted to get into VC straight out of school, no experience or no knowledge about the space. So what does a person need? Like, how do you get your first job in VC?
I think for VC, and I was just having this conversation with a junior colleague, I think 2 days ago, and I was saying, transitioning into VC, yes, you require hard skills, but there's also the soft skills element. For some reason, you have to be a people person because you have to get the founders to trust you.
Introverts. Sorry for you guys.
Well, you will learn. So you have to be like a people person. You have to be willing to learn and unlearn and relearn in terms of how quickly things evolve.
Okay.
Understanding the macros, what's happening in the ecosystem, what are the trends? So being able to study the trends, being able to collect data and process data quickly.
Yeah.
Right? Those are some of the skills you need to have. You need to be able to research. So if you don't like reading, if you don't like doing research, if you don't... So again, this might be good for introverts, right? Because they like reading, they like doing research.
Yeah.
And being able to do that. But then there's also the hard skills part, which is run analysis on the company, build financial models where required.
Okay.
Very early on, you'll be required to do some of that. In fact, most VCs require that you have some skills when it comes to numbers. But as you go through the ranks, perhaps they might not be as relevant. So think about that. If you're straight out of school, you want to come into VC, look for affordable courses on Udemy that teach you about financial model.
Yeah.
VC is not specific to a particular course of study. So, I did human cell biology. How can I be a VC? Yes, you can be a VC. You just need to take some courses in financial modeling and max 6 months. Try and understand the numbers. Try and understand the trends and the spaces, and be willing to network and meet people. And I'm sure you'll find somebody that wants to get you on their team soon enough.
Okay, interesting that you said it's not about your course of study, because growing up, that was how that's a, let's say, a line that we use to tease bankers. Like, you do need to study banking and finance or accounting to work in a bank. Mm-hmm. And I used to think it was weird. So I always thought it was weird. One of my friends was like, even if you like study agriculture, just go to a bank. The most likely
thing. Absolutely.
So that's interesting that it's not just bankers now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how long have you been working at CCO?
So close to 5 years now.
5 years. Okay. So how has investment landscape changed in that time? From when you joined to this point?
It's significantly evolved. At the time when I joined, check sizes were smaller.
Okay.
The definition of stages was different.
Yeah.
Now you have pre-seed, seed, seed plus, series, all sorts of terminology.
Very serious
then
problem.
It was very clear. Seed, you had to be doing XYZ metrics, then the series A. But all that has changed. But beyond that, as in the ecosystem as a whole, we've seen a lot of innovation begin to emerge. And people are not just thinking about how are we solving Africa's problem.
Okay.
Can we solve world problems as well? Can our products be used in other climes outside of Africa? Mm-hmm. So we're finding really amazing founders. Venture capital is increasing year on year, coming into the continent to fund innovation. And we're finding more VCs coming in from Silicon Valley, Europe, and just to be part of almost like what will term as day one now on the continent.
Yeah.
The gap in talent is now becoming more pronounced in the sense that more startups in order to meet your requirements of skill, you have to find the best.
Yeah.
The best are probably in corporates because they can afford them. So you have to be very innovative around how you're attracting the best talent. So there's clearly a talent gap. It's not a Nigerian problem.
Yeah.
Right? It's across the continent. It's across the globe, actually.
Mm.
So we've seen that change. We've seen valuations also significantly change. I was seeing deals early, like in 2017, for about less than $1 million.
Okay.
Now, if you find pre-seed at less than $1 million, you'll
be relate.
Very lucky, right? Ticket sizes have also increased.
Yeah.
For very early stage investors, it's still remaining about that. But now we have a lot more angels, so to speak, emerging. So as a VC, what 50K that used to be a lot back then is what angels will do today, right? So there's been a lot of evolution, whether it's on the qualitative side or on the quantitative side. I think it's a good thing because it just means that the ecosystem is going in the direction that it should go.
Okay.
That's what my experience has been.
Okay. So, from when you joined to this point, we still have like significantly more foreign investors investing in African startups.
Mm-hmm.
And there, some people are worried that this could, not could, that when these companies mature, the ones that succeed will basically be owned completely, or at least a large part of it will still be owned by foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that bothers you, or is it just something that shouldn't be a problem?
Every day. it worries me because I think that a part of us should be responsible for building the future we want to see.
Yeah.
African investors are not used to this type of investments.
Yeah.
They're used to traditional investments in stocks, in fixed income, and real estate.
Yeah.
And there's really high risk around VC investing, alternate asset class, right? And so because of that high risk and how, I wouldn't say the ecosystem is maturing, but we're not there yet.
Okay.
It'll take a while to get a lot more people to come on board this train. Mm-hmm. But it does worry me that most of the investment still comes from outside of the continent, outside of the continent. The hope is that we begin to develop more homegrown fund managers that have capacity to deploy enough capital to these innovative companies to keep them on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, with the whole conversation around AFTA, everyone is saying, is it possible for you to be in Rwanda and still trade across Africa? Is it possible to be in Kenya and still trade across Africa? It's great. But for you to have that capacity from a funding perspective to expand and have a Pan-African reach, you need access to capital.
Yeah.
And so we need to also begin to support, as a continent, homegrown fund managers that would have capacity to support. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
VC is very different from PE, and the way PE will look at a deal and VC will look at a deal is different. So I think there's still a few years of work that needs to go into building out the funding bit of the ecosystem. But I think the work has started, and hopefully we can get more DFIs and more sovereign wealth funds on the continent, as well as corporates to support that growth.
Okay. So you mentioned building for a global market earlier, and it's a conversation that it's kind of recurrent, and I've thought about it a bit. So a lot of African founders, apart from those who get funded, like we have a lot of founders who grew up on the continent, and it's difficult to travel within the continent. So that means you probably find very few founders who have like very good understanding of the continent. So how do you build for the world when all you know is Nigeria or Ghana or Kenya?
The truth of the matter is it takes a very unique founder to build global products. You have to it's almost like an out-of-body experience where you're thinking about what's the problem, what's the unique problem that can be solved across the globe. So again, I think it comes from perspective. Do we have founders in our portfolio that are building global products? Yes, we do. And some of them have, at the time when they started building, they are not even stepped out of the continent. Even out of the country, but they are able to imagine a tomorrow that their demography wanted and start to build for that. So it's finding people who are not enclosed, again, culture, nature versus nurture, in terms of being open-minded to think about what's the problem we want to solve for. Is this a global problem? Is this a local problem? And giving them the support system that is required to build it. So I think we'll continue to see founders like that emerge, especially with all the programs that we have on the continent. YC's coming in hot. There's Techstars, there's 500. And CTOB has done a lot of work in terms of laying the foundation that would allow these types of founders to emerge on the continent. So I think we'll continue to find these types of founders, whether it's on the life science side, which is health tech, or even in terms of innovating around financial services. It'll be interesting to know that Nigeria or Africa has one of like the very evolved financial services or payments vertical compared to other parts of the world. We do like instant payments. Think about it. I can send you money right now and you'll get And some days they'll tell you one or two business days, right?
Yeah.
And so we'll continue to find, as enough support increases, we'll continue to find founders like this who are able to create solutions that will be globally relevant.
Okay. So this year alone, we've had two articles or two stories written about startup founders and the culture in the workplace. And I can't say that much has been done about it, at least to the public. We can't really say that much has been done. So what would you think investors play or should play in ensuring that there's like a proper corporate governance structure in startups?
As an organization and as an individual, I'm very big on accountability. I don't tweet much, but I'm sure every time I tweet, it's probably on accountability. Very big on accountability. And one of the things we do when we invest is ensure that even if it's the base form of corporate governance, it's instituted in the organizations we invest in. I think investors have a big role to play. I think we're in a climb where if you say something your founder doesn't like, the next thing you're tagged as is you're not founder friendly. Right. But being able to say, guy, you're my guy, we're in this together, but this thing you're doing does not make sense. Being able to call out the things that could potentially harm the company, is something that investors should not be afraid to do.
Yeah.
Working with founders early days to set in structures that keep everyone accountable. So the founder might be doing a great job putting their head in the in the sand, just building.
Yeah.
But the other people, like other senior leadership, might be creating a toxic culture and they're not aware.
Yeah.
So ensuring that there's enough information shared that allows the founder, the board, where there's one, have visibility into what's going on, I think is something that is required. So yeah, I don't think with where we are, it might not be eradicated from day one, but hopefully as the ecosystem matures, corporate governance is something that everyone embraces easily. Either founders are looking for it from day one of investment and it's a criteria for accepting an investor, or more investors are willing to play that role of saying, if you take us on board, we will want to see XYZ in terms of your organizational culture. And that will make the ecosystem a lot more better.
Okay, I see. All right. So when you want to invest in a company, you have to like do due diligence on the company. So what's that process like? And what would you want to see in a startup before investing?
So when I do investment readiness classes, what I say to them is start. Investors expect that you start, at least have something to show for. I know now we're in a climb where there's pre-seed, so if you have a waiting list, you can start raising monies.
Yeah.
But the bulk of investors still want to see an organization, something that has started. And so we want to see that. We want to see that you have a team.
Okay.
So at the point when we're getting your deck, it's not just you and one other person, but there are a couple of people who can hold fort if ever anything happens.
Okay.
We have single founders in our portfolio, but we're sometimes biased to having like multiple founders, so two or three founders, because we know that things can happen, right? And you always need that support as a founder. We also look for large enough market size. Is this problem that you're solving for, is it big enough? There's some problems that are not supposed to take VC money, right? So they're going to be small family businesses. They don't have capacity to scale globally. And there are problems that are global problems, right? And they have capacity to scale. So is the market large enough? We're looking at that and assessing, is this problem big enough? We're also looking at the founders. Are these the right people to solve this problem?
Yeah.
So there might be the problem, but then is this the right person to solve this problem? So take a qualitative approach to what's the experience like. We have invested in founders who are very young, so Gen Z, but it just really came from our assessment of their character. Do they have grit? Do they have resilience? Are they people who are willing to learn? So if I say something, you can take it back, think through it and see, okay, how can we make this work? So people that are open to feedback.
Okay.
That's on the qualitative side. There are a lot more other things that we look at. This one comes to a case of numbers and stuff. But that's not the primary. All these other things we've mentioned are not actually the primary things we'll think about first.
Okay. That's interesting. So you mentioned a bias towards co-founders, or at least more than one founder, so that can cause a problem. It's one of the reasons startups fail. So let's discuss the co-founder relationship. What are your tips for ensuring that the co-founder is not the reason your company goes under?
So one of the questions we ask when we find companies that have co-founders, how long have you known each other?
Okay.
If I just met you yesterday or last week and we say, oh, well, let's be co-founders, good job. How long have you known each other? How well have you worked with each other? Like, what's their relationship like? And because what we want to ascertain is, if you ever have a problem, can you resolve it? That's one. What are your strengths and weaknesses as a founder? So typically, if I'm strong in this area, you're strong in that area. I will not be entering you because I know that if you go, who will do the work, right? And so we try to understand what the skill, like the skill set. We try to understand personality. At some point, you use the personality like, test.
Really?
Yeah.
It's almost understand. Like a marital, premarital class.
It is, because again, with the way the ecosystem has evolved, initially we used to have people sign founders agreement.
Okay.
And the founders agreement is, we're vesting over 4 years, but if somebody's head decides to go gaga and you want to scatter everything,
yeah.
Okay, you drop aside, you take what has vested, right? Okay. And we will continue building, you can go. So you just make sure that...
Is that still like commonplace now?
Founders don't like signing documents today. Back in the day, yeah. We used to, especially when you had multiple founders.
Okay.
Everyone's responsibilities were spelled out. Like, I'm responsible for this, you're responsible for that, you're responsible for that. It was clear what the interrelationship was supposed to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so essentially that's what we look out for. What's the chemistry? How long have you known each other?
Mm.
What could be the areas where you would clash? Emotional intelligence and IQ. We look for those things, and if we found that the chemistry was strong enough, they have good understanding and they work well together, it's a win-win for everyone.
So, okay.
Essentially.
All right. So we discussed earlier not really a discussion, but it was touched on the amount of money coming into the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Nigeria still takes the largest share of that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are very excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
So what sectors do you think of and then you're really excited?
Okay. So
first of all, do you get excited at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do, but I try to temper it because you're supposed to be clear-headed as an investor.
Yeah.
But a lot of money, when you say a lot of money is coming, a lot of money is coming into fintech.
So yes.
If you try to categorize, you see it's going to fintech and other sectors are staffed.
Yeah.
From a thesis perspective, we invest in infrastructure. So not just in one vertical. Most people run fintech because for them it's almost like this is a shore banker.
Yeah.
And it staffs the other verticals that are required for human existence from funding. So education is a sector that I'm passionate about. They don't get enough funding.
Yes.
And everyone wants to educate their child.
Yeah, but let's dwell on that for a bit. Why do you think education? Because I always thought, I think we have less than 50% literacy rate in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone can provide a solution to at least get how many people off the streets, how many kids in school, like that's a huge market actually. So why don't we have EdTech startups getting a whole lot of money?
Yeah, because EdTech is hard.
Yeah, okay.
EdTech is hard and it's not minting cash like
fintech. So
right?
It comes down to the cash?
Again, it's a function of your thesis and it's a function of how you, as an investor, how you see infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
As an organization, CCUB is largely invested in EdTech.
Okay.
Both internally as a practice and in terms of our portfolio.
Okay.
We think that education technology is something that is going to be essential to catalyzing
growth
for education or even improving the quality of education into the future.
Yeah.
However, it's not as easy as payments or it's not... there's a science to it, right? If you say you want to build an education app for a children, learning app, there's actually a science to it. And so you have to hunker down and invest in that science, invest in the talent that will build out the product. And sometimes it can be difficult. I imagine a world where VCs are investing in applications that help special needs kids.
Okay, that's very niche.
Have you met? It's niche, but do they need to be educated?
Yeah.
Yes. Would you find companies or VCs in other clients investing in that type of technology? Yes.
Yeah.
But it's not something that is mainstream in Africa today.
Mm.
It's the same thing for health tech.
Okay, that's another industry.
That's another space. When you say health tech, the first thing that comes to mind is EMR.
Yeah.
It's not only electronic medical records that we have a problem with. We even have problems around the life sciences bit in Africa because every time I hear somebody needs surgery, they have to fly out.
Yeah.
Are we innovating around life sciences here in country? Are we spending money there? Are we creating technology that would provide quality healthcare?
Yeah.
For our people or for the continent as a whole. Sure. To do that, there's a huge infrastructure gap. So there's a lot of money that has to go into doing that.
Yeah.
And it's hard work. So you can see if you look at our portfolio today, we go to the hard places. It's okay. Not, so we're not trying to be proud about, but we go to the hard places because we know that if nobody does it,
then
there is a problem.
Okay, so talent is a very serious problem. Mm-hmm. And there's always people always say Nigerian graduates are not employable. And the blame is usually laid mm-hmm. on the university.
Mm-hmm.
And I think CCF does a little around working with universities. So mm-hmm. how do you think the industry, first of all, you talk about what CCF does in that mm-hmm. area, but mm-hmm. how do you think the industry can like collaborate with universities? Because I think there's a lot that can be done there mm-hmm. Between universities.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's like regulatory gray areas there, but mm-hmm. what can the industry do to collaborate with universities? Because that's like, I think it's a wonderful place to get a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. So what do you think I'm doing?
CCOB's ambition around strengthening talent on the continent has mm-hmm. goes back to its inception. Okay. So there's the Yaba Manifesto. And
yeah.
if you know about the Yaba Manifesto, it's one of the reasons that CCOB is planted in Yaba.
Mm-hmm.
Yaba alone has how many institutions of higher learning? There's UNILAG.
Yeah.
This College of Education, there's Yaba Tech. Like, that's a lot of young people
mm.
that need their minds shaped and they need mentorship and all that. Yeah. So CCF has always worked with these institutions, right? But I do agree with you. We complain that there's a talent gap, but then there's not enough resources going into harnessing this talent
yeah.
To be useful to this emerging ecosystem. I think one of the ways is building strong partnerships between the ecosystem and the universities to start with.
Okay.
Where you can begin to run program-based initiative
yeah.
that will begin to harness talent either for specific verticals
mm-hmm.
or from a generalist perspective. So most of these schools have like health departments. So
yeah, I was coming to that.
College of Education.
Yeah.
There's even degrees in education. So one of the things CCF is doing is we're working with TASWED,
okay.
Tai Solaring University of Education. And they have a center of excellence
mm-hmm.
where they work with pre-service teachers. So if you go to College of Education, the thought is that eventually you become a teacher.
Yeah.
But they work with pre-service teachers and give them different skill sets
okay.
that would help them become better future teachers or instructional designers or even take a different path
yeah.
outside of what they've studied
okay.
because they can take that and begin to work with other verticals and helping them create curriculums that would enhance learning and development.
Mm-hmm.
So they've just recently finished a fellowship
okay.
That saw them in partnership with ACT Foundation. So again, I say it has to be a collaborative effort, not one organization.
Yeah.
Where they had fellows from East Africa, West Africa, and the whole idea was train these pre-service teachers to become instructional designers, create mm. products, edtech products
yeah.
That kids can use in the learning journey. That's some of the things that we've done internally. From a talent perspective, I think there's still a broader agenda. There's still a broader agenda or goal. We're yet to scratch the surface, but
mm-hmm.
it's not just CCO. I think it should be the entire ecosystem that is working to harness this talent.
Okay.
And this, I need 10 years experience for somebody that just finished school. We also need to start to rethink that very critically.
Yeah.
It's also something that causes becomes a barrier for people who are hungry and passionate,
mm.
But then they use that as a criteria to exclude.
Yeah.
So, just putting my 2 cents.
I think that makes sense because it's something people complain about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But Okay. So one thing is you need the collaboration here now, they actually require a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, it's hard. You don't get your money up front. Like, if you invest, you don't get your money. Like, you can't say you get it in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can't even get it in the usual 10 years that VCs expect. So mm-hmm. how, I'm just wondering, like, what can convince VCs to like invest in something that the returns are already low and it's not like very quick returns? And yeah, it's not quick returns. So how can we get more VCs there?
So there's usually a play that people take. They call it the impact play. Okay. Most people think about returns not only from financial perspective, but also the sheer improvement in terms of quality of life that you're able to create.
Yeah.
So that's the impact return, right?
Mm.
When you strengthen the input required to, what's the word now? To enhance productivity.
Okay.
I'll put it that way. Then the dollar that you've put into your investment, you start to get the return from it. So I'll give you an example. Go back to the talent story.
Yeah.
If you put in money in a company, but then they don't have good enough talent,
yeah,
then how do you get your money out? But right. If you spend on this other side where you're creating capacity and building capacity,
mm-hmm.
you know that there's always going to be a pipeline where your investing companies can tap into for growth. You can't build a startup without talent.
Yes.
You can't be a startup without product. Products don't build themselves. People build products.
Mm-hmm.
You can't build a product without distribution.
Yeah.
Products don't move around themselves. People move the product,
yeah.
right? So you have to think about it in that way,
mm-hmm.
such that you know that whatever you're doing, even if you don't, it looks as if it's counterintuitive.
Okay.
You know that the end goal is eventually strengthening your own thesis that will get you your financial return.
Mm.
We have people that are doing it today, foundations, DFIs, and sometimes governments. But then we need a lot more players to make the work pronounced.
Okay. So, how many startups do you have to reject in a month?
He didn't say accept, he said reject.
Well, I know you can only accept the limited number, but...
So last year we saw over 3,000 startups.
Okay.
And we, both from our third-party managed funds and internal funds, invested in over 60. Maybe about 70. But mm-hmm. if you look at the number that we saw and the number that got money, you can do the maths.
Okay, that's all right. So earlier we were talking about investing,
mm-hmm.
and not taking another investor's advice, mm-hmm. before making an investment. So, have you ever passed on investing in a company not because of the founder but because of another investor?
Yes.
Okay. Why was that?
So there's something I say, it's conviction.
Okay.
As an investor, you need to invest with conviction.
Yeah.
And if you don't have conviction, then it might be tough to make a decision.
Okay.
And what we do as diligence is, in talking to other people, we try to understand what their conviction for putting the funds in are, and see if it informs our conviction. We have invested in times where somebody didn't have conviction, but we had conviction.
Yeah.
We put in the money, right? The outcomes will usually indicate whether they were wrong or you were wrong.
Mm.
But sometimes you go with the flow. We've said no because another investor thought, had a superior way of thinking about that particular problem.
Okay.
And in having conversation, we were able to see the gaps, and agreed.
Okay.
That was not the right path to go. And there are times where we were very convinced. Other investors didn't see it the way we saw it and were willing to take a bet, and it panned out.
Mm.
Right? So, yeah.
Alright, so let's say I think you mentioned giving classes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you have to talk to a founder who is looking for or looking to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
What are your top 5 tips for the person?
looking to raise monies.
Yeah.
So from my investment banking days, from all the investment readiness classes I've done, from supporting portfolio companies, what I say is, first understand, have a good understanding of your business. Okay. Now, if you've already started and you have some traction and you're perhaps going to raise for a later round, have all your data, have all your facts, have all your numbers in, like, on lockdown.
Yeah.
Know what you want to use the money for.
Okay.
You don't want to get into a room and you say, I want to raise $3 million. What do you want to use it for? Know what your use of funds is.
Yeah.
And know what the result will be. So, okay. $3 million, what are you going to unlock in terms of what are the things that are going to happen? I'm going to hire, I'm going to build this product, blah, 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 blah. And it's going to result in revenue 3Xing, 4Xing, expansion into 5 countries. Be able to tell a story that the investors can journey, but they are factual, they're backed by data that they can see when they come to due diligence.
Yeah.
Build relationships. If you ever know you're going to get investments, talk to investors, hang out with investors, make them your friends. They might not give you the money, but somebody in their network will give you the money.
Yeah.
Don't say, I don't need to talk to an A Series B investor because I'm not yet in Series B. One day you'll go to Series B. It's not then that you start. So there's this thing my mom used to say, if you don't go for other people's wedding, they won't come for your wedding. So you start to go for other people's wedding.
Even when you don't have anyone
because
inside.
You know one day you want them to come. So you're required to build relationships, network.
Yeah.
It's part of the founder's job.
Mm.
Understand your business, understand your vertical, understand your industry very well.
Okay.
Such that people get confidence that you have a good understanding and you can execute in that industry. And just be an all-rounder. I was talking to another investor about a founder of my portfolio and I said, guy, he's really a nice guy. I said, yeah, I know that part about him. That's why we like him. Just be a nice person. Be approachable. Don't be... Again, that's on the character side, but it's easier to work with somebody that's approachable, so that's someone that you think is locked up, right? Just be someone that you're approachable, and a lot more investors will typically gravitate. Obviously, once your business checks out, then there's a character beat, and then they'll gravitate to you. So those are some of the things that we tell the founders to have on lockdown.
Okay. So it's funny how relationships always come back to haunt you.
Mm-hmm.
When you refuse to hang out with your classmates in school, you now realize that for you to succeed in the real, so-called real world, you still need all those relationship tips that you were told to look at.
Mm-hmm. That's
interesting. All right, so I think we're almost coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
But before we go, let's do a little round of light questions.
Mm-hmm.
What are your top three movies?
My top three movies. I give you a secret.
Okay.
I've never watched a full movie.
All right. Why is that? You sleep. That's 30 plus behavior.
So, I've been accused by my friends, even if we go to the cinema, I probably will fall asleep halfway.
Okay.
However, I love series. I can watch a series without falling, as long as it's not too long.
I think I can relate with that because I used to... So when I got into school, my first year, I used to watch movies like I had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get back from classes. I wasn't a very serious student. So I'll get back from classes by 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll watch movies till like 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe around 10, I remember I've not eaten. And I'll rush to go and get food. But the moment I left school, like maybe a year or two, I just found it very difficult to watch movies for too long. So I settled for series.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are like 45 minutes to 50 minutes. But you find movies that are like, last time I watched a movie that was 2 hours, I think I watched that movie for like 4 days.
I tell a lie. I actually liked King of Boys and it was kind of long.
And
I watched it, I did fall asleep on that one.
Oh.
But my default state is to fall asleep away. So if you ever talk about a movie, I know in pockets about it.
Okay.
I don't know the entire story because I probably would have fallen asleep in between. I think it's only series that I can go the entire stretch.
Yeah, I just watch movies for fun. I probably wouldn't remember much about them 2 weeks after I'm done. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's cool. If you didn't answer the question, what are your top three?
So you're going to say my top three series?
Yes.
I like Vikings.
Okay.
I know it's a...
Do you love violence?
No. But my learnings from there is about conquest, taking new territory, and how you find people who have their eyes set on things they haven't seen, but they imagine that they exist.
Yeah.
That's why I like Vikings.
Okay.
And then there's a part of me that likes, I say all the time to myself, even when I'm not gingered, I say, you do hard things. If you've ever watched it, you'll see that there's something about doing hard things. They're willing to stake their life for hard things. And if you look at founders that are successful, that's what
I think. We need more founders like that.
Sure, we have them. We need more, but we have them. They exist. So yeah. Okay. So I like Vikings. What's the other one that I like? I like The King of Boys, the series.
Okay. I reserve my comments.
I liked it. And which other one is interesting? I've been watching a lot of docuseries lately. So do I have any best one? I like the one that Obama did.
Okay, what was that?
I can't remember. My kids made me watch it. There's a series he did about nature and the parks and all that. I can't remember, but I'm sure if anyone Googles it, the natural documentary series by Obama, you'll find it on Netflix. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
I liked it a lot because it let me see like nature in a different light.
Oh.
I don't appreciate the jungle. Like, we have a lot of forest in Nigeria, but I don't think I've ever gone to one.
No.
But just
why would you be in the jungle?
But just watching that allowed me to see nature, like, and experience nature in a way I probably would never have on my own.
Okay. What was the last book you read that changed the way you view a particular subject?
So I'm reading a book about geniuses and how geniuses are made and
not born.
They're not born. They're made. I thought they were born.
Well, I thought so too.
And so I think the jury is still out. Because it's neither here or there. You find Nigerians who have gone to other countries and excelled exceptionally, but when they are here, they look like average. Like we're all together.
Right.
But I'm learning that there are incremental changes in environments or in opportunities that allow someone excel over the other.
Yeah.
And so it's still forming. The jury is out, but it's still informing my mind on how you even select founders.
Oh, okay.
There's no in the box approach to how geniuses are made. They're outliers in life, but if you give people the right resources, the right environment, they have the opportunity to create something very, very unique, very special. So,
okay. So, final question. Three recommendations, book recommendations. For someone who wants to understand startups and investments.
Three book recommendations for someone who likes to understand startup and investments. So, there's a book they made me read when I joined investment banking. And that's not about startup and investment, just general investments.
Okay.
The Intelligent Investor.
Okay.
It's a big book like this by... I think Bill Graham or something.
Okay.
It was made to read that book once I joined as a rookie. So I think you should read, anyone that's interested should read that book, The Intelligent Investor. The other one is The Lean Startup.
Okay.
And then the third one will be, so I'm trying to think about which has really like impacted the way I think about founders. I can't make up my mind. But I would say, I can't make up my mind, so I'll give you my two. I'll leave that.
All right. So I think that's all. That's fine. Intelligent investor and lean startup. I think that's enough.
Yes.
Considering one is really big, that should cover for the other.
Absolutely.
All right. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right.
That's it for today's episode. I hope this was valuable. All the resources mentioned will be linked in the show notes below. Once again, leave a review, share, or subscribe to the podcast. Bye.